Howdy do, buckaroos. Welcome to the Mac Observer's Daily Observations Podcast. It is Friday, February 1st, 2019. I am your host, Kelly Gamott. With me today, I have Andrew Orr. Hi, Andrew.
And a happy Friday to you, Kelly.
We have conquered this week. I'm feeling pretty good about it, actually. Also with me today, I have John Martellaro. Hi, John.
Good morning. Nice to be here.
Excellent. Now, we have a couple of topics today. Our second topic is going to end up with sort of a bonus, but I'd like to talk about our first topic right now, and that is new tech, and when you buy it, the kind of mistakes that people make. Now, Andrew, you want to take us through this?
Yeah, so Popular Science had a good article this morning on five mistakes we all make when we purchase new technology, and I thought it was a helpful things to keep in mind. So the first thing on the list is we buy tech that cuts corners. And this is advice that I've heard before. Basically, it's sometimes maybe a good idea to buy the more expensive option just because it lasts longer. If you buy, you know, cheap things that break down more often, you end up spending more in the long run.
Right. Or you end up buying something that, you know, because you wanted to save $30, for example, and it turns out that the feature that makes it worth having that thing in the first place was in the one that was $30 more, and you're already into it, however far you're into it, so you don't want to have to go buy a new one all over again. So you end up sort of stuck with this one, and then whatever it is that you have, like, you're kind of grumpy about it because you know it doesn't do the thing that you actually, that would make it a lot better or a lot easier to use or something. So I've seen that happen a lot. You know, yeah, but this one was on sale. Yeah, there might be a reason for that.
I think there's this mythology that says that if a product is cheaper, it's because the company is smarter and more efficient. No. It's just cheap.
Well, and there's also different approaches to things. And sometimes, you know, not that this is a spoiler alert or anything, but, you know, sometimes privacy is an issue. Like if you're looking at different sorts of things, you know, if you want a voice assistant, you want to make sure that the company that's getting that data is a company that you trust to have that data and not to do something untoward with it. You know, and sometimes there are price differences in things for that reason. But there's other reasons that sometimes the price can be a little bit attractive. And that was on this list as well, right, Andrew?
Yeah. So the next one on the list is we buy tech that's about to be replaced. And this is especially an important thing to keep in mind in the Apple world, because there are so many rumors year-long about what products are coming next.
We're already hearing about the next iPhone. I just want to let everybody know that now. If you're not paying as much attention to the headlines, we're already seeing people talking about the phone that's going to come out in September or October of this year.
The iPad Mini 5.
Well, we don't know about that one yet, but we're pretty sure Apple's going to make another iPhone, and they usually come out in the fall, and we're already hearing about the next one, and have been for a while.
Is it going to be the iPhone 11?
XI.
I mean, with iPhones, it's pretty easy because, like you said, they always come out in the fall. So that's easy to predict.
Right.
But with iPads, I've seen people asking, should I wait for the next iPad? And maybe it won't. Maybe new models won't come out next year. We mentioned the iPad Mini 5. There's also new AirPods that will eventually, hopefully, get released.
Boy, I
and
hope
then
so.
New Apple Watches. So, yeah, just a thing to keep in mind. Like, try to time your purchase so that it won't just immediately get replaced.
And specifically when it comes to the Apple world, one of the best things that you can do in that respect is there's a handy dandy little resource from Mac Rumors called the Buyer's Guide. And if nothing else, it's a very useful data point on, suppose you want a new Mac Mini, or you want a new iMac, or a new MacBook Pro. You head over there, and it will show you, this is the latest version, this is the day it came out, here's how many days ago that was, and here are the average number of days between times that this particular product is refreshed. So, for example, if you wanted a new iPhone, you could look over there and it would say the newest one came out this many days ago, which was, you know, October. And It's normally about 365 days between them. So, you know, do it, at least that information sometimes can be an influencing factor. If you were trying to, if you were declaring in September, for example, that you were in the market for a new iPhone, most people would tell you to just hold off a little while longer. And you may be able to either A, get the latest one at whatever price you would be paying right now, or B, you can get, you know, the current until they announce the new one model for a little bit less money, which is still a current model iPhone, but maybe you can save a little cash on it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and that has to do with, that's a good segue into the third option, third tip. We buy tech that isn't supported. You know, sometimes like Apple, when a company comes up with a new product, sometimes they'll still sell the old product at a cheaper price, mm-hmm. but you want to make sure that it's still going to be supported.
Right. And sometimes, you know, there's a reason that that old product is now old and, you know, forsaken, or the warranty isn't there, or, you know, the company has decided it's just not going to support that particular thing anymore because they've gone in this other direction, you know, whatever that may be. So, particularly if you know somebody who sort of enjoys following that space, you may want to ask a person or two that you know who might be able to give you a little bit of insight on that. So,
mm-hmm.
you know, like if you are in the Apple market, you know, you can always listen to us talk to you about new things. If you are in like home automation or smart home stuff, you probably know somebody who has, like I do, who has that whole folder of apps that just do stuff, you know, to the different things that they have installed in their house. And maybe you want to talk to that person if you're looking to finally buy a little robot vacuum or something. And finding somebody who at least might be a more attentive observer of those particular kinds of things, you might be able to get some insight from somebody that could help you get that, mm-hmm. get a little bit more information and make a better informed decision.
Yeah, and okay, so the next option is we buy tech that's incompatible. And this is basically just about reading the fine print.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you want to make sure that your printer that you're looking at supports AirPlay so you can use it on your iDevices and your Mac. And you want to make sure if you have a smart home that you're buying a product like a light that is compatible with HomeKit.
Mm-hmm. Or
so just certain things like that.
Yeah, and you know, because you don't want to end up, you know, yes, this is a dated reference, and I understand that going in. You don't want to end up bringing home, you know, a really great deal on a bunch of Betamax tapes, and then find out that all you have in your house is VHS. You don't want to. Yes, Andrew, in the olden days, that's how people consumed media. I hear you snicker at me over there. But those, like, you can end up with that problem. And especially, like, again, to bring up, you know, Internet of Things, home automation sorts of things, not all of that stuff is compatible. And, you know, if you have a Google Home device or you have an Amazon Echo device, you want to be able to have everything play nicely, you want to make sure that compatibility is stated up front. And, you know, because you don't want to get home and have a bunch of Google Home devices in your house and find out that the new light bulb kit you bought only works with Amazon devices or only works with HomeKit, you know, and not being able to do that stuff effectively. So that can be really frustrating.
The problem is that manufacturers are trying to entice you to buy the product by focusing on the positive, and the negatives are not so easy to glean. And so
right.
if you can find a review of that product, say at Wirecutter or somewhere else,
mm-hmm.
find a review of the specific product you're trying to buy. You can read about those ins and outs that the reviewer has already tested and found those weaknesses. So that's a good strategy.
Yeah. And again, you know, mileage, like if you can find somebody that has one already and ask them what they think or how they like it or whatever it is, you know, you can usually find someone who says, I have this one, but the new version does this other thing, or the new version is not great. You know, sometimes that's a thing that happens. So, mm-hmm. You know, the first thing that comes to mind is the Keurig machines, the K-Cup coffee makers, because they started making them with DRM so that you could only put like the pods that they sell into the machine or something. So, like, my old sort of dumb K-Cup machine was, like, really great to have because the new ones came with this chip that wouldn't let you put anything else in them. And so, you know, sometimes... So, do check out what makes the new version new. It's not always something that may work for you yourself.
Yep. And so, finally, the last item on this list is we pay more than we need to. And this... mention certain tools you can use, like there's Keepa, there's
Camel,
there's Honey, an Invisible Hand, and these let you track the price history of an item over time, so you can see if it's like an actual bargain or maybe it's overpriced. Now, one thing I like about shopping on Amazon, it offers something similar. It doesn't give you the price history, but if you do have a product in one of your lists, like a wish list, it will tell you if the price has dropped and by how much. So that's still pretty helpful.
Yeah. And I know specifically with Camel, it will show you the price over time, and then it will also, you can set it up to alert you. So... if you know that the good price is, you know, like once, you know, it dropped down to $50, but a pretty good deal is $60, you can set the alert for $60 and it will tell you if it hits that price. And you'll just get a little email alert that says, hey, that thing that you wanted, it dropped to $60. And it's pretty handy.
Yeah. Yeah, I've used Honey before and it does something similar.
Yeah, Honey does a similar one as well.
Yeah, Honey is cool because it will automatically see if this item you want to buy has a coupon code, and you like click the button and it will try a whole bunch of codes super fast. And sometimes it works, sometimes it doesn't, but when it does, that's pretty neat.
Yeah, so those are some good tips. I'm glad that we I'm glad that you found that article, because those are some pretty good ones. Some other tips for you are I'm going to give you a tip right now, and it is our sponsor today. Our sponsor today is Capterra. Are you still doing things the old-fashioned way at work? We've settled into a new year. It's February 1st. So start the new year off right by replacing that tool that you use every day that just causes you angst. If it makes you sigh deeply and roll your eyes, it's probably time for it to go. You can find that replacement with Capterra, which is the leading free online resource to help you find the best software solution for your business. Capterra has over 700,000 reviews of software from actual users of the software. You can find anything you're looking for because there are over 700 categories to choose from, and you can use those categories to help you make an informed decision, just like we've been talking about. So this includes everything from big categories like supply chain management to something a little more specific like construction accounting software. So no matter what kind of software you need, Capterra makes it a whole lot easier to discover the right solution and to discover it fast. So here's what you do. Go to capterra.com/TDO for free today, and you can find the right tools to make this year the year for your business. So capterra.com/TDO is CAPTERRA.com/TDO. Now, our other topic today is privacy. Today in privacy, we're going to call it, because we actually have two things that we want to talk about as far as privacy this week. And we want to talk about something that a government wants, and we want to talk about a little bit of privacy in other ways. So, Andrew, let's start with GCHQ.
Yes, so the GCHQ... it's basically the British version of the NSA. It's called the Government Communications Headquarters. And it sounds like they were in love with this group FaceTime bug that under certain circumstances, users could like snoop on the other person.
Only sort of, because the phone was ringing. So... so it isn't exactly secret, you know, when you add yourself. The phone would be ringing, but the microphone is live before the person on the other end decides whether or not they want to decline the call or answer the call. So, yeah, you can hear a little bit, you know, that you're not supposed to actually be hearing.
Oh, damn. It's Kelly again.
Exactly.
So what the GCHQ wants, they have this proposal called the Ghost Proposal. Mm-hmm. And basically, in certain cases, the government wants companies like Apple to be able to add a member of the agency secretly to a chat. So they can, you know, spy on a FaceTime call or an iMessage chat. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, it's basically the old argument of putting a backdoor into encryption, because these apps could still be end-to-end encrypted. But at the same time, that doesn't really matter, because if this is a possibility, how can you trust who you're talking to?
Right. And if anybody can do this,
not be encrypted.
Right. If anybody can do this, then anybody can do this.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, which is something we've gone over before. And yeah, not great. So nice work, GCHQ. I really hope that this isn't a thing that happens, because it doesn't seem reasonable for a bunch of reasons.
Well, this is going nowhere with Apple, because right. That's a big feature. And Apple's just going to shrug and say, you know, we'll take it under consideration.
Yeah. Thank you for your feedback.
Yeah.
So that's go ahead.
Like in the case of Apple, law enforcement can already access a lot. I mean, iCloud backups are not end-to-end encrypted. Apple can provide the key to law enforcement if they have a warrant. Mm-hmm. And if you turn on cloud storage for iMessage, that was introduced in, I think, iOS 11 or 12, mm-hmm. your entire chat history will be in that backup that law enforcement can go through. Mm-hmm. So I'm not sure, like, the GCHQ, since they're foreign, they probably couldn't do this, but I don't know.
And that might be why they went in, is because otherwise they wouldn't have a way to do so. So the legislative implications of a lot of this get pretty interesting as you cross lines. You know, if you live in another country and, you know, say you're using an iCloud server in the United States, how do those laws apply to you and all that kind of stuff? So those are things that are still sort of being worked out now. And speaking of servers in the United States, we actually have a second topic that's privacy related we can discuss, right?
So speaking of trying to get a warrant for this data in the cloud, a representative in Utah, Craig Hall, he has introduced this bill that sounds pretty simple on the surface. I'm sure there's more to it than this, but it would require police to get a warrant before they can access electronic data stored in apps and cloud services.
Mm-hmm. And so, the thing that was nice about the bill, at least the way it was described, was that he said this is basically what the same kind of protection you would get if these documents were on paper. Mm-hmm. And he's just trying to extend that sort of known quantity of privacy and warrants and all that kind of stuff to things that just don't happen to be on paper. Because if these were things that were like printed out and stored somewhere, then the process for that is known and works, and you know, all of the things that go along with that, it's a pretty known quantity. And this would just be extending that to your own personal stuff, even if it just happens to be something that lives in your phone or lives on in a cloud service. Now,
that brings up an interesting point with me.
Yes.
That the technology got so far ahead of the lawmakers so quickly that they weren't able to think in terms of extending the normal laws to electronic communications. And so it became sort of a wild, wild west with the fast changing electronic world. Which means that because there's no consistent mantra about how we should conduct our privacy operations, law enforcement seems eager to just keep on going to the well when it comes to, you know, law enforcement and saying, well, crime continues. Mm-hmm. We're going to keep begging for access to your private data until crime goes down. Mm-hmm. And we've solved the problem, but that's never going to happen. So,
right.
You know, there was a time when appealing to law enforcement as a way to abridge privacy rights seemed not very wise. But there seems to be continuing and continuous and greater momentum amongst law enforcement who mm-hmm. keep trying to pick away at this. And after the voices are so loud for so long and so many, mm-hmm. it seems to me like there's this sort of feeling like, well, yeah, this is a good idea.
Right. And part of what frustrates me about this is that the people who are in charge of making laws about this kind of stuff don't always understand this kind of stuff. And, right. you know, the latest example is when Sundar Pichai, the head of Google, was in a Senate hearing, and one of the senators in the hearing asked, how is it that it's possible this could happen on an iPhone? Mm-hmm. Like, the head of Google is going to know anything about how things work on an iPhone in a way that he can explain to a senator. And, you know, that's the kind of stuff that worries me, which is sort of why I'm glad that I have a senator who understands it. I live in Oregon. My senator is Ron Wyden, and he's a person who has a pretty decent grasp of technology and is one of the people who tries to offer up some of this legislation that I think there are probably people within Congress that simply do not understand it. And mm-hmm. so that makes it really hard. Like, how are you supposed to be a person who passes laws about things that you don't have a good grasp of? And I would say that about anything. You know, if people are trying to pass something very specific to regulating farms, you know, there's probably a lot of people in Congress who don't understand that either. And, you know, and you know, that's where you have to start relying on staff and other people whose job it is to make sure that they're up to date on this kind of stuff, so that again, just like we were talking about with buying new technology, you know, your decision needs to be as informed as possible. And I think sometimes that information is getting lost, which is kind of a bummer. Now this bill unfortunately is not a bill in the House of Representatives. This is a state legislative bill in Utah, right? Wasn't that?
Yeah. Yeah. And I'm not sure how far it's gotten. There was a judicial committee that voted basically to pause it so they can talk about it more. Mm-hmm. But there were several members of that committee that supported it and hoped that it does pass. So, mm-hmm. so far it sounds good.
Yeah. And it would be the sort of thing that, again, you know, in the grand scheme of things, this isn't a new idea. Because this is, again, how things work on paper. And so just extending the rules that we have for what people used to have before there were smartphones, you know, trying to make sure that those same sort of rules apply if those documents just happen to be digital, it seems pretty reasonable to me, and it doesn't seem like something that should be controversial at all. But obviously, if we're talking about a bill that's been taken to the Utah state legislature and none of us live in Utah, you know, there are some headlines being made there, which I think is going to be interesting. And of course, as always, when we hear more about this, we will be sure to relay that information to you. So I'd like to thank all of you for joining us on Friday in Privacy.
Actually, I just want to make one more point.
Yeah.
So this is a reason why we need a federal privacy law. Like, yes. These things that your senator is doing, the thing that this bill is doing in Utah, it's great, but it's so difficult for companies if every state has its own privacy bill, mm-hmm. privacy law. So that's why we need a bill that works for everyone in all states.
Right, because what happens, again, you know, like, there are a lot of server farms in Oregon, for example, and what if we have a very rigid privacy bill, but somebody whose data is living on servers in Oregon happens to not live in that state, right? If you live somewhere mm-hmm. else where there's no privacy protection whatsoever, but all of your data lives in a state where there's lots of privacy protection, what happens to you? And that's where the state-by-state stuff, I think, can get hard. And hopefully, like, this ends up being a good sort of exemplar for something that should happen at a federal level. And then, you know, at least if everybody's playing by the same rules, then that might make it a little easier for everybody on both sides.
Yeah.
Both people who are targets of law enforcement and also law enforcement, because everybody will sort of go in knowing that these are the rules and that they apply to everybody mm-hmm. no matter where you are. So Yeah. I think it's going to be interesting to see where this goes. This bill in particular. I'm very interested to see where this goes. So I hope that Utah is one of the states with a lot of open data so that we can go and look this bill up occasionally and find out if it's making any sort of progress. I certainly hope so. Thanks for bringing that to our attention, Andrew. I appreciate you coming by today to talk to us about it.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
And John, thanks for coming by to talk to us about technology and also a little bit of privacy.
You bet. It was nice to be here.
I'm really glad you were both able to make it today. And I am your host, Kelly Gamont. This has been the Mac Observer Daily Observations podcast for February 1st. I will talk to all of you on Monday. And in the meantime, be excellent to each other.